Welcome to The Glider Show, the audio podcast about learning to fly gliders. This is your host, Sam, and I'd like to welcome you aboard my journey from undecided gliding trainee to fully addicted solo glider pilot. I fly from the beautiful county of Devon in the southwest of the United Kingdom, and finally, down our way, some sort of summery weather has at last arrived. We seem to have skipped spring altogether this year, but I'm not complaining. Much. In fact, you should have heard me last week when I took a week's holiday and it rained for most of it, and the temperature, unbelievably, barely got into even double figures. Sorry, you've got me talking about the weather again. Now, in this week's show, I'll be looking at the gliding news from around the world, I'll be visiting a different gliding club, and I'll be making a big and surprisingly difficult personal decision that will shape my gliding for the next 6 months. But first, the news. From Canada, Air Cadet Glider Program may be grounded. In Department of National Defence emails obtained by the CBC, the department proposes cuts to the Air Cadet Gliding Program, saying the ACGP has become the primary target for cost reductions within the cadet program. The email says the decision to close the glider program, quote, will come as a complete surprise. This is indeed a dark day for the Air Cadet program, it says. For many young cadets, the gliding program gave them their first taste of flight. If there's one thing that the global gliding community needs, it's young people getting into the sport. The piece also points out that Canadian astronaut Chris Hadfield, who's been in the news recently, and the most recent commander of the International Space Station, was in fact a member of the Air Cadets himself in the 1970s. At the age of 15, here we go, surprise, surprise, Hadfield earned a glider pilot scholarship. He went on then to earn a powered pilot scholarship at only 16 years old. I think you've got your answer there, Canadian forces. World's first two-seater solar plane, stroke glider. Sunseeker duo Solar Motor Glider seeks Kickstarter funding. Piloted solar flight has been a reality for some time, with even international flights now possible. Up to this point, such voyages have been strictly a solo affair. However, the team originally responsible for the Sunseeker 2 intends to change this by manufacturing what's billed as the world's first two-seater solar aircraft, a motor glider named the Sunseeker Duo. The design of the Sunseeker Duo is based on the Stemmer S10, a glider which has been in production since the 1980s and features a folding propeller which is contained within the aircraft's nose cone when not in use. And the propeller will be driven by a 20 kilowatt direct drive motor with power provided by 72 lithium polymer batteries wired in series. At present, the Sunseeker Duo is still a work in progress, and in order to help bring the project to completion, the Sunseeker team has turned to Kickstarter to raise funds. If all goes well, project leader Eric Raymond aims to make a series of flights worldwide, beginning with a circumnavigation of the Americas, with the goal of highlighting the benefits of solar technology. In addition, a documentary film crew will follow the progress of Raymond, and a book is also planned to document the adventure. There's a video to show the team's pitch on the site that's also worth watching, so I'll put a link to that in the show notes for you. In the USA, one dead in Mastic glider crash. Only pilot was aboard. National Transportation Safety Board is on the scene of a crash of a small glider on Long Island Saturday that killed a pilot. According to Suffolk County Police, the flight left Brookhaven Calabro Airport at 10:55 a.m. and crashed 11 minutes later. NTSB spokesman Eric Weiss says eyewitnesses described a Schweizer SGS glider descending before rolling to the left and crashing into the ground. The victim has been identified as 74-year-old Vincent Petrusso of Saint-Maurice. No one else was on board and there were no other injuries. And whisking you to the far side of the world, in Australia, man dies in mid-air glider collision. A 50-year-old man has died after two gliders collided mid-air near Goulburn. One of the gliders struck the ground, causing fatal injuries to the 50-year-old male pilot and serious injury to his 70-year-old male co-pilot. The injured pilot was taken to Sydney's Liverpool Hospital. Seconds earlier, ground crew had called the winch operator to stop the winch, according to the Southern Tablelands Gliding Club's Colin Veal, who was sitting next to the operator, but it was too late. He immediately stopped the winch, which was all he could do. It stops virtually instantly, but of course the glider is still moving. You can't see why he would take off if he knew they were coming. I think that's a really good example for being very conscious and paying close attention to the all clear above and behind part of the launch process that we do over here in the UK. So, at the Gliding Club. As I came to the end of my membership of Dartmoor Gliding Society, I decided to take up an offer from Mark Courtney at Devon and Somerset Gliding Club to pay them a visit. Mark had originally contacted me to offer words of encouragement a few episodes back in the show, where I was seriously questioning whether gliding was really for me or not. So now seemed like a good time to drive up to North Hill Airfield to meet the man behind the emails. Welcome to Thursday, the 16th of May, and Claire and I are sitting in the car outside the house, and for the first time this week, it's second time it's sunny. First time yesterday was when we went to Cornwall, and today it's sunny because we're going to check out Devon and Somerset Gliding Club at North Hill. I'm going to go and see what it's like up there, and maybe take a taster flight in a motor glider. But it's an interesting visit because it comes at the end of, or in a gap between membership of Dartmoor Gliding Society and possible renewal. And because the way it goes, you have to commit for another year up front. I think it's really wise to go and have a look somewhere else and see what is on offer. So Claire, how do you feel about coming along as a passenger to see somewhere new?
I'm quite excited, actually, for you, just to see the difference, actually. And, you know, the weather's nice today, which just hasn't always been the case in the last few months.
No.
and there's a button that goes from sunshine to Sam's brain.
And yeah, when it's sunny, everything's all right.
Yeah.
It isn't.
It's doom and gloom and misery. So.
I think they call it seasonally affected disorder.
Yeah. It's just sad.
Sad. Okay, so we've got about an hour's 15 drive. We've got our Google Maps working as a sat nav, which we
just in case.
We didn't even have the voice telling us what to do, but we'll report back to you when we get there. Well, just checking in here on what's going to be episode 14 of the Glider Show, and I'm having a unique experience in a DG505 somewhere above North Hill on. A bit of a blue thermal day, and we got 8 to 10 up there, and Mark is turning us around on a wingtip in this beautiful fiberglass glider, which is the first experience I've had of going up in one such thing, and I'm now at 2,000 feet, so I'm getting my money's worth, which is fantastic considering I haven't paid anything yet. Here we are over 2,000 feet, just took a nice rush up there, a couple of hundred feet, and we're going up again, so this is really strong. And one of the things I'm noticing about where Mark's flying the glider is there's hardly any stick movement to it at all, which is quite impressive. I'm sort of nervous at the idea of taking any control myself because I don't want us to be down on the ground in 2 minutes flat. Now, I'd like to apologise for the terrible audio quality there. In the heat of the moment and the thrill of getting into my first ever fiberglass glider, I managed not to switch on the audio recorder, with the result that all I got was audio from the microphone that's on board of the drift camera. And as anyone knows who owns one of these little sports wide-angle camera, the audio quality is invariably really poor. So what you can't really hear there is the sheer thrill of getting an unexpected flight in the DG-505 on a perfectly sunny day in East Devon. Now, the winch took us up smoothly to about 1,500 feet, and we found ourselves immediately connecting with a very narrow thermal. But thanks to Mark's supreme skills and the very responsive aircraft, we managed to hang on for dear life onto that little thermal as it tracked in the direction of the wind across the airfield, and luckily it grew stronger by the minute, and eventually we were getting somewhere between 6 and 10 knots of lift and made it up to 2,500 feet for about 30 minutes of gliding. I also got to fly the beast for a while, and I was really impressed by the directness and the responsiveness of the controls and how little input I needed to make the aircraft do what I wanted it to do. From this comfy seat, I could see three coasts. The cliffs of Sidmouth to the south, the Bristol Channel to the north, and beyond that, I could even see South Wales. Amazing. Back on the ground, we sat around the table outside the club cafe in beautiful sunshine to shoot the breeze. Mark, thank you for that flight.
No problem.
I really enjoyed it. We're sitting at the debrief table with a nice cup of tea and a biscuit. I think we've probably had about half an hour with you scratching the hell out of a single thermal. You could feel it moving, we could see us moving across the airfield in the direction of the wind, just sticking to this one thing. But I really enjoyed the feel of that
good
aircraft.
Good. I think you did really well, I have to say.
He's only saying that because we're on.
No, nice gentle touch, that's the main thing. With any new aircraft, feel the aircraft. Once you've got a feel for it, then you can start throwing it about. But initially, if you're going to do really steep turns, you're going to make yourself work really hard. So I think you threw it really well.
Now, how long have you been here at the club?
Well, I started flying when I was 41. I'm 58 now. And I did about, I suppose, about 10 months at another gliding club. And then I ended up moving up to here, and I've been here ever since. And then just had a dream, really, from the day that I got into a glider, the first glider I ever got into. From that moment on, I thought that my ambition would be to become an instructor. That was it, literally, from the day one.
What made you, rather than just fly it and have your own and have fun, what made you want to, you know, go straight, I love this and I want to instruct in it?
I don't know what really bit me, because I knew, A, it was going to be, you know, a fantastic experience to learn how to fly, but I just had this burning desire from day one. I looked at the instructors and thought, just imagine being able to teach somebody this. I just thought that is just something to aspire to, and that was my main drive all the way through. That was what I was driving for from day one. I remember going to Bren Tor on 2 days before my 41st birthday to use up the voucher. Sat in, and Trevor was flying me, he was brilliant. And at that point, when the canopy was coming down, I honestly believe if somebody had said, do you want to do it another day, I would have been gone. I just really started to get quite nervous then. The canopy came down. And
that's before your first flight.
Before my first flight. And I thought, God, if he'd said, do you want to do this another day? I honestly believe I'd have got it and never come back. Yeah. But luckily, he didn't. He closed the canopy and off we went. And we had three short flights, but Trevor being Trevor made it really interesting. And from that minute on, I knew I was hooked, basically.
So you were saying earlier, you were telling me it's a kind of dream since childhood to fly.
Absolutely. Yeah, from when I was a tiny little child, I always remember staying at my auntie's, and she had a multicoloured carpet, and I used to imagine it was the flying carpet, and I was obsessed, and I used to dream all the time of flying. All my dreams would just be flying.
Is it just me, or do fellow glider pilots, could you happily park at the end of an airport runway and sit around all day?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that's the first thing I do on holiday. I want to try and find the end of the... went to Lanzarote and try to get to the end and watch them coming in and land.
I knew it wasn't just me.
Oh, God, no. That's the only thing I would say to people, you know, be warned. Somebody warned me. He said, you will become obsessed by the sport, and you are. It just grabs you, doesn't it, Pete?
Yeah.
And Pete's a mad, crazy...
I mean, every now and again you think, this is crap, I'm going to give this up tomorrow. And you never do. You have one good flight, and
well,
that's it.
Pete and I last summer, we depressed each other, because every time we saw each other, the weather was just so bad. And I got to the point where I really was fed up. I thought, I think I'm just going to have to stop this, because I can't cope with the disappointment.
That was the summer I started to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then it was. And then you get one flight and you think, what was I thinking about?
I mean, gliding is a different thing to different people, though, isn't it? I mean, instructors love instructing, that's why they do it. We've got people that sit in K6s, they've had them 30 years and never gone further than Columpton.
Yeah.
That's what they want to do.
Yeah. That's right.
Fine.
Yeah.
That's what I said to Sam earlier. It's what you want. Gliding's what you want it to be. The other thing, what I found, with every sport I've ever done, whether it was water skiing, barefoot skiing, snooker and everything, I quickly reached a physical limit, and I knew I wasn't getting any better.
Yeah.
But when I got into gliding, there was always another rung to climb, always. And the ladder is infinite, you just keep climbing.
Why? What was the limitation in the other sports?
Well, obviously with water skiing, your physical ability...
Barefoot skiing, I can see the limitation in that. It hurts.
The circumference.
And so I stopped slalom, because I was slalom skiing.
Right.
It wasn't just an ordinary water skiing. Yeah. We were trying to get around the boys, and very quickly you realise that, you know, you've got to be born with the right genes to be a top water skier. So I tended to get fed up then, because I felt like I was reaching the snooker. I just played it and played it, and then realised I wasn't going to be any good at it. And so it goes on. But with gliding, there's always a new challenge.
I think the other thing is, the people have got a lot to do with it. Like all the things Mark's mentioned there, snooker, water ski. I mean, they're very individual. Water skiing, perhaps not so much, but it's an individual thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. That's the difference, Pete. But here, you, particularly if you all go away for competitions, you all buddy up, go off in convoy. It's fantastic.
Well, not even just competitions, just going away as a group.
That's what I mean,
club.
Yeah.
Even though you're flying individually in your glider, you're still have that sort of camaraderie after the flying. Hey, how did you get past that? That's right. I really struggled there. Oh, no, I had an awesome climb. Mm-hmm.
Although it's an individual thing, I don't actually enjoy cross-country flying when I'm on my own that much. It's much more fun when you set a task, and there's half a dozen of you doing it. A lot more fun.
Gliding is so many different things. If it was only about cross-country, half the people would, give up and go away.
That's right. Are you particularly attracted to the cliff thing? Because that's where I saw you.
Well, no, it's just another adventure.
He's more a mountain boy, actually, and they're the nearest things we've got to mountains.
I don't know if it's an honour, but your article takes pride of place in my downstairs toilet. I don't know how much of
you could take that either way.
No. I think portraits and toilets are the height of living.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You've scored if you're in
every now and then when toilet. I need inspiration, I have to go and read that article. And
that sort of stuff, we need a fairly strong southerly wind. Mm.
And a dry one, you were saying, wasn't it?
Yeah. And normally it's pissing with rain with a southerly. And take a nice aero tow, come off the tow, onto the hills.
So is that the kind of thing you planned beforehand?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it's coming in, it's dry, it's dry air.
Yeah. Yep.
Get the plane out, we're going.
We've been looking at that for, I don't know, over a year.
Right.
Before the actual, clubs open, we're here.
Conditions
The cloud base is high enough. And because we'd been talking about it, there was about five people all just went, Sunday is the day, and everyone was here. And
except for me, I was in Mexico, unfortunately.
I was
savage.
I was at work.
Oh, I was savage.
And, we had five gliders went down there on the first time that we've been there back there in years. Those sort of things just reinvigorate everyone again.
Well, it kept me going in the dark times last November or something. Yeah.
Well, if you ever look at Matt's videos on YouTube, he's got quite a lot on there, and some of them are actually us flying together, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like a gang of us doing a four-ship sort of cross-country type thing, and they're good
fun. The Dan Busters music playing.
Yeah, in the background.
No, not quite that old.
Thanks to everyone at North Hill who made us very welcome and showed us around for the afternoon. Which brings us to the business of making sense of joining a new gliding club. Joining a gliding club is a simple business, but being part of one isn't. Now to join, you just find the one nearest you and you head up there with your money hanging out of your pocket and a look of interest on your face. But once aboard, you'll quickly discover that this is just the start. It's the start of a steep learning curve, but it's also the start of fitting into a diverse group of people. And this is hard work for any group of people, let alone people whose main aim, frankly, is to stay airborne in splendid isolation for as many hours as is humanly possible. Now, if you're going to get a group of people together, then there has to be some kind of agreement about how people treat each other. What kind of behaviour is acceptable and what isn't? The problem is that you can't arrive at that without talking about it, without making it explicit and important. At the end of my 6 months at Dartmoor Gliding Society, I had to admit to myself that I wasn't enjoying the experience as much as I wanted to be. I decided to visit the other gliding club in my region, Devon and Somerset Gliding Club. This club is 1 hour 15 minutes drive from me compared to the 3 minutes away that Dartmoor Gliding Society is. I was very impressed with the location, a very smooth field, surrounded by trees on a beautiful ridge sticking out over the East Devon countryside, where I spent quite a few years of my childhood growing up, so it's familiar ground. We were welcomed to the club, and after tea and cake and introductions, which are always weird when you run a podcast and people already sort of know you, we then took a walk over to the launch point. It was a stunningly sunny day, lots of cumulus when we first arrived, but as luck would have it, the sea breeze from the south coast came in just as I got an offer to fly with Mark in the twin-seater DG505. 30 minutes of thermaling later, though, we landed and I was hooked on the responsiveness of the big plastic glider. I felt like I'd arrived in a YouTube video. Mark then took me on a tour of the facilities and pointed out the motor glider with a promise of a reconnaissance over the cliffs of Sidmouth. I got to see the little Pawnee tug plane that opens up the possibilities for aero tows, something I want to do but I wouldn't be able to experience from the base on Dartmoor. I also got to meet some of the regulars and chat, including Matt Mr. Sidmouth Cliffs himself, an airline pilot, and his day job. All in all, we had a great afternoon and were very impressed not only with the facilities, but even more by the friendliness and the welcome from the people there. I left mulling over the decision facing me. In fact, Claire and I talked of nothing else all the way back home, an hour and 15 minutes of intense discussion. Should I join this new club? More expense, further away, better equipment, more possibilities, or should I rejoin for the next year at Dartmoor? Closer, cheaper, and a known quantity. In the end, I decided to join the new club. Now, don't get me wrong, I felt bad about leaving behind friends I'd already made at Dartmoor, and very grateful for the support and instruction that I've received in my journey so far. But at the end of the day, you only live once. It's got to be fun, and if it isn't, then there's got to be something wrong. Moving to the new club will give me a fresh experience to weigh up just how far I want to go with gliding. It'll bring me into contact with lots of new people who can contribute stories, experiences, and insights to the glider show, and it will connect me with a wider gliding community beyond Devon as well. More than anything, though, what made my mind up was that it was clear that Devon and Somerset Gliding Club has a strong focus on how it treats its visitors, the quality of their experience, and how members interact with each other. For me, this all too often overlooked dynamic is probably the most important factor of all. And in comms this week, I'd like to say a quick hello to new Twitter followers since last time. Welcome to Deaf Pilots UK, Ben Vickers, John Gulain, the National Soaring Museum over in the United States, Flyware, that's Flyware Clothing, DAA, Paul Rackham, Martin Joyce, David G, and Adam Aston. I look forward to talking to you guys on Twitter and on the Glider Show sometime. In our mailbag this week, I've dug to the bottom of the bag and found an old email that I missed the first time round. So straight away, I'd like to say apologies to Donat over in Hungary. He said quite some time ago, "Hi Sam, my name is Donat. Pronunciation donut, okay? Like the fried dessert. I've recently come across your podcast. I've already listened to the first 7 episodes. I personally find them entertaining and also informative since I'm also a student gliding pilot. Our club is called," and I'll forget the Hungarian version, I'll give you the translation. He says it's Technical University's Sport Aviation Association, and the airfield is located at Budapest. The weather has not been very kind to us. In 2013, we only had 1 day of operation. There has been a lot of snow and rain by far. The runway is flooded by water right now, an unhappy face. Because of that, I only had 1 flight. We spend bad weather days in the classroom. Feel welcome to check out the website, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And Donut says, "Sorry, only in Hungarian language, but there are some nice pictures. And there's also a YouTube channel that you can check out. Bye for now, Donut." And an update from our man in South Australia. Patrick says, "Hi Sam, I hope you're well, my friend. Last week I managed a few flights from the Winch Club at Balaclava Gliding Club, not having flown the Winch since January. I managed 4 flights with some friends from Hong Kong who are currently completing their ATPLs with Flight Training Adelaide and will eventually end up flying A320s with Dragonair and A330s with Cathay Pacific, both out of Hong Kong. I managed a short soaring flight in the ASK-21 as we only had 1 two-seater online as the other is in for repairs. I managed 6 knots of lift up to 3,500 feet, so that wasn't too bad, an achievement for an autumn day of 21 degrees. Believe it or not, it's even been raining here in Adelaide, a very rare sight indeed. The Adelaide Soaring Club cancelled its aerobatics course last weekend due to rain. Bugger. A friend of mine, Bernard Ecke, has written a book about gliding, and to spur you on your career as a glider pilot, I've had him autograph a copy, and I'd like to send it over to you, so please send me your postal address. Well, thanks, Patrick. Just reading this letter out on the Glider Show has made me realise I completely forgot to send you my postal address. I'll rectify that. Thanks very much. I'm sorry to hear about your cat, mate. Oh, yes, our beautiful kitty we had to have put down about a month ago now. We had to put down our old English sheepdog, and that was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. It is, and when you do have to put down a loved pet, you join a large family of people who understand how you feel. Anyway, I hope it's warming up your way and that the lift is strengthening. Well, it was last week. Wishing you strong thermal, safe skies and tailwinds, my friend. Warm regards, Patrick. And we got an email from Peter Krieger. Peter says, "Dear Sam, I have listened with interest to your podcasts and your progress in learning to fly gliders. I thank you for the time and effort you put into sharing these experiences with others, including myself, who are also learning to be glider pilots. Clearly, the decision to start your training in the UK winter was not ideal, and the poor weather conditions have caused you delays and have been a frustration for you. Does it come through? Hopefully that will change as you move into summer. After listening to your early podcast, I decided to undertake my gliding training where the weather would not be so frustrating, and instead went to the Lake Keep It Soaring Club in New South Wales, Australia. They have excellent gliding facilities and provide 7 days per week operations on-site accommodation with full-time live-in courses, and have weather conditions that year-round are generally very good for gliding. As a result, in the space of 2 busy weeks, I completed all my gliding training to the Certificate C level, which now allows me to carry family and friends as passengers. I also completed some cross-country flying. My glider training progress was enhanced by the previous power flying experience. However, the ability to conduct a full-time living course with weather conditions that were consistently good for gliding was a great way to learn to glide, as well as being a truly enjoyable way of spending 2 weeks of holidays in Australia. It is an option that others may like to consider to overcome the long time frames and frustrations you have encountered with your training. Good luck with the rest of your training, and I will continue to follow your progress via podcasts. Best regards, Peter. Great piece of advice, Peter. And I actually started to have a look around, took a look at the club you were talking about. It suddenly struck me a really good idea. Why not? Why not look at spending 2 intensive weeks, get a holiday, take time out from everything else, and do it in a place where you can guarantee the kinds of thermals you'll need to learn nonstop throughout 2 weeks. I think it's a really, really solid idea. And that's all for this episode of The Glider Show. It's time for a change of scenery. And I'm excited to take The Glider Show with me so you get to meet some new and interesting people. I'm hoping to go solo before the end of this summer. This being England, I'd better be quick about it. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the show. Don't forget that as I develop as a glider pilot, so does The Glider Show. And as ever, you're welcome to be part of the show with me. Send me audio clips of your gliding world to ukglider@hotmail.com. Or check the Take Part page on the website for other ways to get involved. I'm also keen to feature interesting projects and stories on the show, so if you'd like some exposure for your gliding project or want to tell the gliding world about something that's happened in your part of the world, then get in touch and let's arrange some kind of interview. Well, until next time, whether it's summer or winter where you are, fly safe.